York is a city of countless discoveries. You'll find surprises just about everywhere, at museums, in office towers, parks, and even in restaurants. The city is also full of unique characters, from real-life superheroes to singing sanitation workers. Good morning. I'm George Bodarkey, and this is Cityscape on 90.7 FM and WFUV.org. Each and every Saturday morning, we make new discoveries about New York City together here on Cityscape, and we meet the people who make the city tick. This morning is no different, with one exception. Today starts WFUV's fall membership drive, and we need you to be a little bit more interactive than usual. So please go to WFUV.org right now and pledge your financial support for Cityscape. Every contribution goes right back into what you hear on Cityscape every week. And we have a great way to say thank you for your contribution this morning. You and a guest will join us for an exclusive Cityscape ghost tour of Central Park with New York City tour guide Maria Deering. That'll happen on Saturday, October 16th, right before Halloween. So a perfect time for this. Don't miss out. We only have 10 pairs to give away. So scare up a contribution for us now at WFUV.org. Tour guide Maria Deering has been a guest in the show a couple of times over the years. Here's a taste of what you will encounter on her ghost tour. Well, here we are at the Central Park Van Shell. It's a lovely fall morning, a little breeze here, beautiful fall foliage, and perhaps a ghost among us.
This is the story of the ghostly cornetist who haunted this Van Shell and this part of the park in the summer of 1912. And every summer then, as there still are now, there were outdoor concerts that were free to the public. And during July of 1912, the concerts were frequently interrupted by a high-pitched cornet blast. No one could figure out where it was coming from. And the strange thing was that the cornetist only haunted the band shell when the band played Beethoven. So the conductor would strike up a Beethoven concerto, and all of a sudden, from the distance, you'd hear a horrible, high-pitched sound. As soon as the Beethoven stopped, the cornetist would stop. One time, the band struck up the Leonora Overture by Beethoven, and the cornetist came back with double the force, playing airs from Tannhäuser, Wagner's opera. People were so upset because they had to stop the concert so that the music would stop, I mean the cornet music. The park rangers went to look for whoever this was. People sitting in the benches looked around. No one could find out where the sound was coming from. There used to be a casino up the hill behind this band shell, and they thought maybe it was somebody from there. But they searched it, and it wasn't. Well, one day late in the summer, an old sailor named Ben Sennett said, "Oh, you're looking in all the wrong places. That really is a male jackass." Now, a jackass is not a donkey or a mule. It's a kind of a mimic bird, like a mina bird. He said, "That's got to be it. That's got to be it. It must have escaped from a local zoo. And it can mimic anything. It can mimic animals. It can mimic human voices and music. So you have to look for the escaped male jackass." But no one ever found that, and no one ever found the source of the music. And it stopped at the end of that summer. So I wonder if it wasn't old Ben Sennett himself.
Had I known this story before I arrived, I would have brought a recording of Beethoven and put this to the test.
That would be really good, because where we're standing right now, this Naumburg band shell has been repaired many times, but there's a door at the back of the orchestra, and you do kind of wonder if the ghost wouldn't come right out that door onto the stage where we're standing.
Maria Deering is a New York City tour guide. You'll find her online at mariadeering.com. That's Maria, D-E-R-I-N-G.com. For a financial contribution to Cityscape this morning at WFUV.org, you can join Maria on an exclusive ghost tour of Central Park on Saturday, October 16th. We only have 10 pairs of tickets available, so take a couple of minutes now to show your support for WFUV and for Cityscape. Where else does the host eat grasshoppers? That's just what I did for a show on bugs this past summer. Okay, so now here we are, seated, ready to eat the grasshopper tacos. So I'm going to try one individually before I actually try the taco itself. So here we go. Actually, when you go to touch them, they look like they're going to move. That's all I'm going to say. They do. They look like they're going to actually run off the table because they still have their legs attached. They still have their heads attached. They are fully there. Okay. It's a little harder than I anticipated to actually pick one of these up and eat them. But I'm going to try to do it. Laura is giving us water so I can quickly wash it down if I have a problem.
Just pretend like they're just little crunchy chips. Pretend like they're just little grasshopper-shaped chips.
Good advice. Okay, so here we go. Ready? I'm lifting one up. I am crunching it. And I am saying they are actually quite delicious.
One of the more interesting characters we've come across here at Cityscape is a guy simply known as Squeegee Man. Beyond that, he really needs no introduction.
My name is Squeegee Man. I'm a local superhero here in New York City, and I fight crime and grime.
You look very much like Superman, I must say, with your red cape and your blue outfit.
Well, my outfit's not entirely blue. I have a blue shirt, but I wear green pants, and I keep my underwear on the inside.
How long have you been fighting crime and grime in New York City?
In New York City, I've been fighting crime and grime probably about 7 years now. But before that, I fought crime and grime all over the state. I've been doing this my whole life.
A lot of superheroes have tragic stories behind them. As we know, Batman, his parents, Bruce Wayne's parents were killed, and that drove him to fight crime. What drove you to fight crime and grime?
Well, the thing that drove me was probably just seeing everything around me, all of the pollution that could be easily picked up, all of the apathy that went on, the homeless people living on the streets. And I said, you know what? I have all these superpowers anyway. Why not be a superhero?
What kinds of superpowers do you have?
Well, I'm very strong. I can do a lot of push-ups. I'm very fast. And I'm pretty sure I'm invulnerable. But I've never been shot, but I would guess the bullets would probably bounce right off.
Your weapon of choice, though, is a squeegee. You are Squeegee Man.
Yes, this is my squeegee of power, and I have a whole arsenal of various squeegees, as you'll see. I have my squeegee boomerangs, and I have my squeegee grappling hook, and so I have all these squeegees to use.
So tell me about a day in the life of Squeegee Man in New York City.
Well, I wake up, I get dressed in my superhero uniform, and I start patrolling the streets, making sure there's no crime going on. A lot of times the crime stays away when I'm around. And if there's litter on the street, I pick it up. If I see someone littering, I inform them that they've just littered and try to get them to do it themselves.
How do they react to you?
Most people are happy to see me. It's like seeing a celebrity. You know, I just took the subway train. I mean, I would have flown, but it's kind of hot out today, so I decided I'd take the train, and a lot of crime takes place on the subway. But I was swarmed with fans. Everyone wanted my photograph.
So if you do spot trouble, a robbery in progress, what would you do as Squeegee Man?
Well, the first thing I would do is probably yell, "Stop." And at that point, the robber would probably be so afraid they'd start running away. And then I'd take one of my squeegee boomerangs and throw it, and the robber would look back, and I'd run so fast that I'd be in front of the robber. And then the robber would, like, run into me on accident. And at that point, it's easy to apprehend.
Are you afraid of the risk, though, of doing this in New York City?
I'm a superhero. I'm not afraid of anything.
Now, as far as helping the homeless, what do you do to help individuals who are in need here in the city?
What I mostly do is I deliver food. So I'll just buy some granola bars or some snacks and try to hand those out as I patrol.
Now, here behind us there are a bunch of kids playing in the playground here in Union Square Park. Do you try to encourage young people to do this kind of civic duty here in the city?
Yes. You'll see if you watch my squeegee blogs, which I post online, that I have a several blogs where I have children helping me clean up.
A lot of superheroes have their undercover identities. Clark Kent, you know, he was a newspaper guy. And, of course, he was Superman. What about you? Do you have an undercover identity?
I don't have an undercover identity, per se. However, if I needed to infiltrate some sort of situation, I may put on a hat and a jacket, and maybe even a tie.
Do you work alone?
Most of the time I work alone, but I also squeegee work with Captain Xavier Obvious sometimes.
And tell me about Captain Xavier Obvious, did you say?
Yes. Well, Captain Obvious is a superhero who dispenses the obvious, and that's pretty much what he does. He's got a megaphone of truth, which he speaks through, and it's really loud, and he can yell really loud, too.
What do you do when you hear a police siren go off in New York City? Do you follow it? Do you go to see if there's trouble that you could attend to?
Well, of course, that's what superheroes do. Usually I hear the trouble before the police siren, though, so they show up and the trouble's already taken care of.
Is that because you have super hearing?
Yes, yes. I have super everything. Like, everything that you can do, I can do super. That's what makes me a superhero, really. And I figure since I have these superpowers, I should do even more than the regular person should be doing.
Is the mayor aware of what you do? Do you have a red phone in your office and you wait for Mr. Bloomberg to call you?
Oh, I wish I had an office. I have a squeegee layer, but due to the housing situation right now, I had to move out of my squeegee layer, so I'm just kind of a vagrant superhero for now. I haven't met the mayor yet, but I'm sure he'd approve of what I'm doing.
Superheroes in New York City even have difficulty with the housing situation, huh?
Oh, yes. Especially superheroes. We don't make a lot of money, so we can't afford a lot in squeegee rent, so...
All right, Squeegee Man, is there anything else that you would like to tell us about what you do here in the Big Apple?
To all of your listeners, you're not too small to be a superhero yourself. If you see some litter, put it in the garbage. If you see someone in need of help, help them out. It takes very little to help someone, and you can do so much. Just if we all did just a little bit, we would all take care of so much more.
Spoken like a true superhero. Squeegee Man, thank you so much.
Squeegee, thank you.
Squeegee Man is what they call a real-life superhero right here in New York City. Cityscape is the place where you meet these kinds of colorful characters all the time, and we can't do that without your financial support. This morning, we're reminding you that we are member-supported public radio here at WFUV. Pledge your support for Cityscape now at WFUV.org and join us for an exclusive ghost tour of Central Park on Saturday, October 16th. Every now and then, I do an interview that makes me a bit uncomfortable here at Cityscape, like the time I had to talk about bras. It was a show we did on underwear. It featured an underwear model, a longtime manufacturer of underwear, and a bra fitter in Lower Manhattan.
So walk us around a bit. Show okay. us this place. Take me into the bra fitting room. Where is the bra fitting room?
Oh, let me show you.
It's behind the curtain.
You have a great vintage mirror in this fitting room.
Thank you. I sometimes feel like a therapist, what goes on here.
Is that true?
Yes, absolutely, because when a woman takes off her clothing, she's bearing all. She tells you everything about her life. See, something as simple as finding the right bra size can change a woman's life so drastically that she feels so indebted to you and so happy. I've had women cry because they have the right bra on. Sometimes when you put the correct bra size on, you can make a 50-some-odd-year-old woman look like she's lost 10 to 15 pounds because you can definitely see her waist, finally.
So these here are not underwear, am I correct?
Right. This is lingerie.
What's the difference?
I always say that it's better not to wear underwear but to wear lingerie because lingerie is something that makes you feel great when you put it on if you're wearing the right type of underwear and bra. Underwear is just so mundane. Lingerie is just, it opens up a whole world of something else.
What do you say to people who say, you know what, no one sees what's underneath my clothes, so what does it really matter?
To those people, I have really very little to say because they don't get it. It's very, very important to have something very beautiful or that's something that fits very, very well on your body to greet the day. I call it my feminine armor. You know, you're met with so many struggles, children, husbands, the job. So it's very, very important to have on something that makes you feel great. I mean, when you're wearing the right bra and the right underwear, you walk differently, you talk differently, and you're perceived differently because you have confidence. Now, the difference in A, B, C, D, and beyond, I like to give a fruit. I've been doing this for so long, that an A cup is like a plum. And a B is like an orange, like a navel orange. A C is a grapefruit. A D is a melon, and beyond.
Can the right bra turn a plum into a melon?
Never.
When the host turns all shades of red, well, that's radio worth your financial support. Show us some love this morning at WFUV.org. Speaking of love, Cityscape is sometimes your match.com of sorts, and we don't charge you, except for today when we're simply asking for your financial support. We are member-supported public radio, but I digress. Last year, we did a show on French culture in the city, and writer Andrea Chalupa gave us a lesson on how to meet the Frenchman or woman of your dreams.
When I went to France one summer, I came back with a Parisian boyfriend in a long-distance relationship. Suddenly it seemed like everyone in New York was French, or longing to be. It turns out New York and Paris are sister cities, or rather, a long, hot love affair, the stuff of Aries and Aphrodite. New York may be a melting pot, but France enjoys a quiet stronghold, with a bistro practically in every block. While Paris watches over R. Mark Jacobs and David Sedaris, New York gives France's former first lady, Cecilia Sarkozy Attias, her morning jog, and eternal sunshine of the spotless mind filmmaker Michel Gondry, an endless playground for the imagination. Luckily for us jaded New Yorkers, we're right at home with French cynicism and love of intellectual conversation. And the Frenchies love us for our chutzpah, only they call it sans gêne. Whether you're in search of the endless charm of a love affair with a French person, or a reverse green card, here are a couple tips for dating French people in New York. First, know that they stick together. Checking out an early Cédric Clapiche film at Alliance Française, attending a New York French social meetup, or crashing a party at ACAI, a social organization for French people, or hunting with other Francophiles at French Tuesdays, it's important to know that like any community abroad, the French travel in herds. Where there's one, there's plenty more where he or she came from. Thanks to my French boyfriend, who now lives in New York, I still manage to be one of the only English speakers at many a wine-drenched party. If any neighborhood in Manhattan deserves the label Little Paris, it would be the Lower East Side. Sure, the Upper East has its share of bistro after bistro, thanks to the mothership Alliance Française being on 60th Street. But it's the LES that gives you sexy, salty, jazz-infused Paris. The blog, Paris in New York, points to over a dozen hotspots where you're sure to overhear French swelling from tables, or see men and women take a break from their meals to smoke a cigarette outside. My absolute favorite, just based on personal history, is Café Charbon, the proper name being Epicerie and Café Charbon, where the bubbly, laid-back waiters are chill enough to let you practice your bad French, and the dining room is a throwback to a quaint grocery. And the dark bar, with its palm trees, makes you feel like you're in Casablanca, or someplace a 25-year-old Ernest Hemingway used to drink. The way to a French person's heart is their stomach. This cannot be stressed enough. The French are a country obsessed with food, talking about it and eating. How else do they stay so slim? They have a healthy relationship with food, good food, the au naturel. If you promise to shop from Dean & DeLuca, a fine store in New York that closely resembles the grocery stores the French are accustomed to, then ask them to show you how to cook. Every one of them knows something. Even Ratatouille is just throwing veggies into a pot. Now, here are some curveballs you can throw your Frenchie once you have Elle or Louis in your crosshairs. Don't gush over Paris. It's boring because they get it all the time, and he or she may be from Lille. Instead, tell them that Zidane, or rather Zizou's, footwork belongs in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It does. Then follow this up by shaking your head at the Italians. Also, the French love or know how to rock dance, which is a more upright version of swing dancing. They grow up, especially as teenagers, rock dancing. It's something they do at any age at weddings, so get them to show you some of that dance le rock. Also, it's important to know that Serge Gainsbourg was a musical genius with the potency of Michael Jackson, Andy Warhol, and chain-smoking Frank Sinatra in one. Get a load of his song, New York, USA. J'ai vu New York, New York, USA. J'ai vu New York, New York, USA. J'ai jamais rien vu d'eau, j'ai jamais rien vu d'eau. Si oh, c'est oh, New York. And today, York, the French USA. Love to DJ, and they love their electronic music. If you're already obsessed with Daft Punk and Dimitri from Paris, may I recommend Martin Solveig and Bob Sinclair? Africanism Project 2. It will make you want to go to Miami, a place French people and New Yorkers love. And once you're ready to take the encounter up a notch, blow smoke, gently, in his or her face and purr. Tu es mignon. You're cute. This basically lets them know that you want to be kissed, or worse, and that someone told you that as adolescents, the French blow smoke in the face as a form of seduction. It's still a cute gesture that shows, I'm one step ahead of you, Frenchie.
Andrea Chalupa is a writer here in New York City. This morning, Cityscape is asking for your euros as we begin our fall fund drive here at WFUV. Your pledge of support for Cityscape this morning at WFUV.org nets you a pair of tickets to an exclusive ghost tour of Central Park on Saturday, October 16th, while supplies last. And while you pledge your support, we give you one of our all-time favorite Cityscape characters, Andrew Macchio, New York City's singing sanitation worker.
Red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that a flag was still there.
Oh, my name is Andrew Macchio. I've been working with the Department of Sanitation for nearly 23 years. I'm in my 23rd year now. I've always sung behind the truck as I'm working. I have to. It's what gets me through my job. My job isn't glamorous. It keeps my mind off what I'm dealing with, number one. Keeps my mind off my problems. From when I was a child, I've sung from when I wake up in the morning till I go to bed at night, and I sing all day. All somebody has to do is they might say something. They might come out with a cliche or even a phrase, a regular, day, you know, everyday phrase, and then it might trigger off, you know, a song.
I've gotta be me. What else can I be but what I am?
You know, I hope I put a smile on somebody's face as they're walking to the subway, as they're walking to work, take their mind off their problems, get them to sing or even to hum or whistle. And one woman just tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around and all she had to say was, you put a smile on my face. That makes my day, believe it or not. If I can do this for somebody else, I don't despair in the fact that I'm not helping somebody.
I'll go it alone.
My name is Lou Santora. I work for the New York City Department of Sanitation. I have 24 years on a job. This is the route we do every day. We march up and down 65th Street, me and Andrew, picking up New York City's trash. We like our job. It's a good job. We have a lot of fun working together, me and Andrew.
What I am, that faraway prize.
A lot of times in the morning I'll say, come on, Andrew, sing a song. It's a nice thing he does. A lot of people stop and applaud and clap, and you know, they say that he's terrific. A guy this morning said, oh, you ought to be singing at Yankee Stadium.
I could never pursue a singing career because, believe it or not, I have stage fright.
And have it all, I'll go it alone. That's how it must be.
I never liked working in an office. I just didn't like the confinement. Just being out here in the outdoors, it's wonderful. You know, even though I'm not breathing such healthy air because I'm behind the truck, I'm behind cars that are stopped right by us, but still, I love being behind the truck. I love the physical work of it. It keeps me going. You meet people.
Daring to try to do it or die, I've gotta be me.
I like being up, especially when it's the morning and it's still a little dark, and gradually it gets lighter and lighter and lighter. The brighter the sky gets, the quicker I am to being done, because I know it's almost quitting time.
I've gotta be free. I've gotta be free. Daring to try to do it or die. I've gotta be me.
Andrew Macchio, New York City's singing sanitation worker. Just one of the many characters you meet on Cityscape each and every week. That is radio worth your support. Please make a financial contribution now at WFUV.org for commercial-free public radio and Cityscape. There was no mistaking the smell when I was out there with Andrew, but on another Cityscape, I had a lot more trouble while visiting an olfactory school in Midtown.
Going to take a blotter. dip it in the vial, and you're going to tell me what you smell. We are going to do a multisensorial portrait of what we are smelling. So if it was a color, what would you say it would be?
I would say this would be green.
Okay, okay, I can also smell green. I also smell something maybe beige or pastel, definitely not a bright color. If it was a shape, what would you say it would be?
The first thing that comes to mind is square, and I don't know why.
Okay, well, that's interesting because I don't see square at all. I can feel something round or oval with curves, but I don't see any angles.
So what's wrong with my nose?
There is nothing wrong with your nose. This is a raw material that you are not used to smell.
This morning on Cityscape, we're asking you to show us some love with a pledge of financial support at WFUV.org. Today starts our fall fun drive here at WFUV. I know you fell in love with this radio station right away, much like the story of Anna and Seymour Greenberg, who lived together at the Hebrew Home for the Aged in Riverdale. They've been married for nearly six decades.
How did you two meet?
How did we meet?
I don't remember.
57 years ago.
Yes, I remember. We were in the country.
Yeah, in the mountains, in a hotel.
In the mountains.
Or in the Catskills.
Oh, you were in the Catskills.
Yeah. At the Concord.
The Concord Hotel.
I show you pictures of Anne dancing. She won a contest at Lindy Hop. She learned it at the Savoy Ballroom in Harlem. She was in Macy's. She was there. She was an executive in Macy's. She was there 50 years, and she ran the parades, the Thanksgiving Day parades, and she was in it too. And she did everything.
Do you remember Seymour? What attracted you to Anna?
It was nice, very attractive. She made a nice living. She was a very nice woman, and she had no father. Her mother lived with us. I took her mother in with us when we got married, and I gave her a nice bedroom and everything.
Anna, were you smitten with Seymour right away? Was it love at first sight?
It's such a long time ago. I don't remember
either. It's 57 years ago. Thank God we're still together.
Why do you think you are still together after 57 years?
Why? We're lucky. I went through a lot of operations, and so did she, and we lived. That's all. God was good to us.
What are some of the things that you two love to do together?
Dancing?
Yeah.
Who's a better dancer?
She is. She's a terrific Lindy Hop dancer. She was.
Today, I can't tell
you. Women are the bosses?
What's that?
Why the Jewish women are the bosses?
No, why?
When a Jewish man gets married, he breaks a glass, you know? That's the last time he puts his foot down.
You probably have a million of them, huh, Seymour?
Yeah. I used to tell a lot of clean jokes. They had me on a stage in Catskills doing things. And that's it. What can I tell you?
What can you tell me about Seymour?
He's kind and he's gentle and he's lovable. He was good to Mama. Unbelievable. We gave her the master bedroom when we decided to take an apartment. And I said, I can't leave my mother alone. And he said, you don't have to. We'll take her with us. Who would say that today, right?
What's your advice to other couples?
What's my advice to other couples? Keep your mouth shut.
Anna and Seymour Greenberg have been married for nearly 60 years. That's 6-0. Well, now is your last chance to show us how much we mean to you. We're asking for your financial support during our fall membership drive here at WFUV. Go to WFUV.org right now and pledge your financial support. Well, thank you for that contribution this morning with an invite to an exclusive ghost tour of Central Park with New York City tour guide Maria Deering. That's on Saturday, October 16th. We only have 10 pairs available. Thanks to all of you so far who have ponied up this morning. We thank you for that pledge of support. I'm George Bodarkey. My thanks to senior producer Andrea McCreary. You have a great weekend.